Here's Teresa Tamio.
Well, good morning, everyone, on this Wednesday, October 8th. It's Vanessa Denha-Garmo filling in for another morning here for Teresa Tamio on Catholic Connection and EWTN production. Always happy to be with all of you. We have three guests joining us here in this first hour. Michael New, Assistant Professor of Social Research at the Catholic University of America. We're talking about abortion rates dropping. And so we'll be talking to him about that here today. In fact, a number of Guttmacher estimates abortion decline in 2025. And it's an article in the National Review. And the Institute released new data from its monthly abortion provision survey. And the data contains some good news for pro-lifers. So according to the Institute, the number of abortions performed in the first 6 months of 2025 fell by about 5% when compared with the same period in 2024. A number of mainstream media outlets have covered this abortion decline, including The Washington Post, CNN, and Time Magazine. So we'll be talking with Michael New about that here on Catholic Connection this morning. Then Katrine Bennett is going to be joining us. She is the author of Holier Matrimony, Married, Saints, Catholic Vows, and Sacraments. What a great topic to talk about. And I know a lot of people, this is like a season for a lot of people to get married. So we'll talk with her, to get engaged, actually. This is like a big engagement season during the holiday season. So we'll talk with her about the, you know, her target audience and, you know, who would benefit from reading the book and what prompted her to pen the book, Holier Matrimony. So she's a lay Catholic author, homeschooling mama of three. She loves Hispanic food and brownie batter ice cream. So in early 2020, she noticed that almost all well-known saints were priests or religious, and she started feeling personally called to get to know some Catholic saints and some blessed and venerables and servants of God on the road to sainthood who were married. And so we'll be talking with her about that. Her goal was to write a book that helped other married Catholics grow in holier matrimony in three ways: by introducing some holy married role models, by explaining our marital vows in light of beautiful teachings of the magisterium, and by reminding them about the blessing of marital grace. So we'll be talking with her about that. Yes, it's not about the wedding day. It's about the marriage. So many people focus so much about the wedding day, and I know it's exciting to plan a wedding, but it's so much more than a wedding day. It's definitely our life after that day, right? Joan Lewis will be joining us, as she always does, talking with Teresa Tamio here on a Wednesday. So we'll be talking with her about the general audience, the Pope's first foreign trip. We'll also be talking about the papal apostolic exhortation from Pope Leo. And there's a message for 40th World Youth Day. So we're talking about that, as well as some comments from the Pope on Gaza. So much to talk to Joan about here this morning on Catholic Connection. So it's a very packed hour. We hope you stay with us for the entire time. And we're approaching 4 minutes past the hour here on Catholic Connection. And now it's time for the news on EWTN. Showers and cooler temperatures in the east, multi-day rain event in the southwest, hurricane warnings, heavy freezing spray warnings, high wind warnings. A cold front in the east will bring showers and thunderstorms and much cooler temperatures from the northeast into the southeast. The southwest, centered around New Mexico, will continue to see showers and thunderstorms where there may be isolated flash flooding. Tropical moisture will bring a multi-day period of thunderstorms and locally heavily rainfall across the southwest beginning on Thursday. A Florida state lawmaker wants public universities to pay tribute to slain conservative activist Charlie Kirk. Dade City Republican Representative Kevin Steele filed a bill yesterday that would do just that. HB 113 would require roads or portions of roads on public college campuses to be named for the Turning Point USA founder. Those that don't comply would lose state funding. Kirk was shot and killed last month during a speaking engagement on the campus of Utah Valley University. President Trump thinks he knows why Democrats are dug in as the government shutdown continues. More from Mark Mayfield.
Trump spoke at the White House.
This is like a kamikaze attack. They have nothing to lose.
He again said that the party has no leadership while he, the president, has a mandate from the American voters. The federal government shutdown has so far lasted over a full week. Republicans want a temporary stopgap bill to reopen the government and promise to negotiate on the expiring Affordable Care Act tax credits. Democrats don't believe the Republicans will follow through on that promise. I'm Mark Mayfield.
An FBI corruption unit has been shut down after it reportedly monitored communications between some Republican senators. Rory O'Neill has that story.
An FBI unit is being shut down and some agents fired after a Fox News report this week found agents were monitoring communications from nearly a dozen GOP senators. Director Kash Patel said the unit known as CR-15 weaponized law enforcement against the American people. The unit was part of former special counsel Jack Smith's investigation into President Trump's alleged efforts to overturn the results of the 2020 election. I'm Rory O'Neill.
Johnson & Johnson is being ordered to pay nearly $1 billion after being found liable for a woman's cancer death. Tammy Trujillo has that story.
Moore died of mesothelioma in 2021. Her family claims her death was caused by the asbestos fibers found in Johnson & Johnson's talc baby powder. A jury in Los Angeles on Monday ordered the company to pay the family $16 million in compensatory damages and $950 million in punitive damages. A spokesperson for Johnson & Johnson called the verdict egregious and unconstitutional and says they plan to appeal. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
Both presidents of the United States and Speaker of the House say the NFL fumbled by choosing Bad Bunny for the Super Bowl halftime show. Rory O'Neill has that story.
President Trump calls it absolutely ridiculous. Speaker Mike Johnson says it's a terrible decision for the NFL to book Puerto Rican superstar Bad Bunny to perform the Super Bowl's halftime show. Both the president and the speaker acknowledged they didn't know who Bad Bunny was before his name was announced. Johnson suggested the NFL should have gone with Lee Greenwood, best known for his patriotic anthem, God Bless the USA. I'm Rory O'Neill.
The USDA says some HelloFresh meals could be contaminated with listeria. Mark Mayfield has that story.
The agency warns that affected ready-to-eat meals could contain spinach tainted by the bacteria. The meals involved are the cheesy pulled pork pepper pasta and the unstuffed peppers with ground turkey. Consumers who receive these products between September the 6th and October 9th are urged to throw them out. So far, there are no reports of anyone becoming sick. I'm Mark Mayfield.
President Trump is rolling out a new 25% large truck tariff. President Trump is imposing a new tariff on all medium and heavy duty trucks imported into the United States. Nick Harper has that story.
The Trump administration says it's all about protecting U.S. manufacturers from unfair outside competition. There are a few weeks before this new tariff rate will come into effect, 25% from November the 1st. Potentially a bit of time for truck makers to petition the White House to get the tariff removed. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce has warned that it will affect American consumers, driving up prices. I'm Nick Harper in Washington.
Meanwhile, employment growth was reportedly flat last month, according to the investment giant Carlyle. Tammy Trujillo has more.
The company is putting out numbers since the government shutdown has stopped the release of official reports from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The numbers showed 17,000 new jobs in September. Last week, payroll processor ADP showed a loss of 32,000 jobs. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
Catholic actor David Henry has teamed up with EWTN Studios to create a new travel docuseries, Seeking Beauty, coming to EWTN Plus this December. In the first interview regarding this exciting new project, Henry joined Monsi Alvarado, president and COO of EWTN News, to discuss the new series with the network news platform EWTN Plus offers him in the pursuit of creating virtuous content. His own faith journey and the joy of creating high-quality content that also elevates the family. Henry also shares why beauty is ultimately the language of the divine and reflection of God. Here's a clip about a nomination of an award in recognition.
Now, David, this is a really exciting time for you in your career. You've got the reboot of your famous show where you're playing a wholesome dad, not a deadbeat dad.
You made a mistake.
I make lots of mistakes.
It's a part of growing up.
Also been nominated for a couple of awards. Talk to us about that. How do you feel in this moment?
Yeah, we got, it was an honor to be nominated for the Television's Critics Association Award. It's a really tough one to get for outstanding achievement in family programming. Like, my whole kind of ethos and brand behind my company, which is Novo Inspire, means new in Latin. Our goal is to make entertaining and elevating content for the whole family. Things that, you know, if you have a bowl of soup and there's one fly in it, it ruins the whole thing, right? Mm. So we're trying to make delicious bowls of soup that is content with no flies in it.
He continues in this article in the National Catholic Register. You can read the whole thing, but we'll read a little bit more to you. To see the recognized from a huge secular organization is a massive, massive honor. I had this thesis that families just are being underserved. They just want beautiful content that has no agenda. It's safe. It's just intuitive and beautiful. And it's nice to see that's working out. Thanks be to God. So I'm really happy. And this article continues with a conversation. I'll read a little bit more for you here in the National Catholic Register. And Monsi asks, when you talk about the flies in the content, can there also be flies in the characters that you're asked to play? And he says, yes, of course. Of course there are. I mean, I've been had to be very selective. I'm married. I have three kids. I want them to see things that I'll be proud of one day, that they'll look back and go, my dad made decisions that I respect and that I like. Now, there's nothing wrong with flawed characters. We're all flawed people. So you should tell powerful stories about flawed characters, but nothing that would offend the eyes of good people who are just wanting to have a good time and aren't looking to cover their kids' eyes in the middle of programming. And then the article continues. It's in the National Catholic Register. It's a great article, and how refreshing to have such wholesome programming that we offer here on EWTN. And like you said, it's great programming, character storylines, and all the wonderful series that EWTN produces. Now, looking at the national weather forecast around the country as we finalize the news here on EWTN, it's colder temperatures across the whole United States, temperatures lowering in the Midwest and the East and as well as the West. So 61 degrees in the northern part of Michigan, 66 and rainy in Detroit. Chicago is seeing 65 and cloudy skies. Minneapolis is getting sunny, but only 64 degrees. And then we're looking at St. Louis, 75, a little warmer, obviously, when you go down south, 81. Atlanta, 82 degrees. Rain showers in New Orleans at 86 degrees. Houston, Texas is going to see 90 degrees, 92 actually, but some rain showers. And if you look out east, it's warmer in Boston and in New York, 80 in Boston, 79 in New York. Washington is seeing 81 degrees. Buffalo, however, is 67 and rain showers today. And if you look on the West Coast in Seattle, it's sunny and 72. Medford, 83 and sunny. And then San Francisco, we got 76 degrees and sunny. Los Angeles is 80 and sunny. Phoenix is the highest temperature, 98 degrees in Arizona. We got to take a break here on Catholic Connection. When we come back, we'll be talking with our first guest. Don't go away. We're back here on Catholic Connection, connecting with Michael New, Assistant Professor of Social Research at the Bush School of Business at the Catholic University of America. And he's joining us. He is a regular guest of Ave Maria, of EWTN and Teresa Tamio. And Michael, always a pleasure to talk with you. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. I much appreciate it.
So, Michael, let's talk about this new estimate abortion decline in 2025 and an article you penned. So give us an overview of this.
Sure. From time to time, the Guttmacher Institute releases updated data on abortion, and they came out with some new data for the first 6 months of 2025, and they found some good news for pro-lifers. The number of abortions has declined by about 5% since the previous year. So that's a good thing. The main reason for this decline is largely the Florida Heartbeat Act. On May 1st, 2024, Florida enacted law that protects preborn children after 6 weeks gestation. And that's had a big impact. It's protected preborn children in Florida, also other states. Women in states like Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana were often going to Florida to obtain abortions because laws there used to be more permissive, but they can't do that anymore. So it's saving unborn children in Florida, saving the preborn in other southern states. That's playing a big, big role. That said, you know, I'm telling pro-lifers to be a bit cautious. Guttmacher does not give a comprehensive count of telehealth abortions. You know, that post-Dobbs, women can obtain chemical abortions through the mail. And their data on that may not be completely accurate. So while there's some good news here, I think we have to take this with a little bit of grain of salt.
So what do we attribute this to, and why should we take it with a grain of salt, just to elaborate a little bit more? But what do we attribute this to?
Well, again, if you look at the overall decline, you see declines in a lot of states, California, New York, Massachusetts, also slight declines. You saw the biggest decline in Florida because, again, the Heartbeat Act, which protects the preborn after 6 weeks gestation, and it protects the preborn in Florida and other southern states. But again, women in nearby states that sometimes obtain abortions in Florida because the laws there were previously more permissive. When it comes to, you know, these telehealth abortions, again, you know, tragically, you know, women who want to obtain chemical abortions can do so online. You know, they can go and get an online health consultation, and a doctor can prescribe the abortion pill, and they can obtain this pill through the mail. And these telehealth abortions are undermining a lot of the good pro-life laws that we are passing. So a lot of the counts you see from different groups, you know, they try to count telehealth abortions, but since it's unregulated, there's a good chance those numbers may not be completely accurate. So, you know, we need better data, but more importantly, we need to stop these telehealth abortions. You know, letting women obtain chemical abortions without an in-person medical exam is fatal to unborn children, but terrible public health for women. I mean, if a woman is in a ectopic pregnancy that obtains an abortion, that can be fatal. If a woman is further along the gestation and obtains the chemical abortion, that can have some very negative, serious health consequences. So pro-lifers have our work cut out for us.
Okay, and what do we do then, Michael? Where do we go from here when you said we have to stop these types of abortions? How do we do that as lay people listening here on the show?
Well, there's a couple of things at place. I mean, first, there are some states' attorney general that are working on this. For instance, I mean, I would argue that a lot of these telehealth abortions are illegal. If a woman in Texas, you know, has an online consultation with a New York physician, that New York physician should not be allowed to prescribe her a chemical abortion pill. That New York physician is licensed to practice medicine in New York, not Texas. So you have some state attorneys general that are trying to prosecute these out-of-state doctors. We'll see how that goes. But here's the good news. The Trump administration can stop this tomorrow. The reason why we have telehealth abortions is because of the pandemic. During the pandemic, the FDA changed its rules, and they started allowing women to get these abortions online. The Biden administration continued this unwise policy, which the Trump administration inherited. They could change this tomorrow. The fact they're delaying is frustrating to pro-lifers. We just have to keep the issue salient. We have to let the Trump administration know this is important to us. We want to see prompt, quick action. So we just have to keep the issue alive. I mean, they are doing a review of chemical abortion pills at HHS. That's a positive development. They could be doing a lot more, a lot faster.
So, Michael, now what is stopping, in your opinion, the Trump administration from stopping this practice?
That's a very good question. You know, government works slowly. You know, I do think you have some career appointees at HHS and FDA that may not be sympathetic to Donald Trump and some people, you know, in his administration. You know, I think that Trump, to be honest, there are people on Trump's team who think it might cause a political backlash. You know, I think there are some people, you know, who work for President Trump who are very pro-life, but there are some people who aren't. And I think some of his advisors think that putting some limits, protections on chemical abortions might hurt him politically. I think that's causing some issues. So I don't know what's running around the head of anybody's mind, but, you know, pro-lifers are an important part of his coalition. We have some political leverage. We just have to keep this issue salient at the forefront.
So, Michael, who are the people including yourself, like, who are the people that would put pressure on the administration to get them to change this if they could do it today? I mean, where do we go from there? And who are the type of people that would put pressure on the administration?
I mean, the Beltway pro-life groups are working hard on this issue. It's certainly something we care about. Groups like Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America and National Right to Life and Students for Life and America's United for Life. I mean, we are engaged on this issue. But we need, you know, frankly, Beltway groups are great. We just need ordinary people to do their role, too. I mean, people can write to the president. They can write to HHS. They can write to the FDA. I mean, we just need to make it clear this is a priority. You know, pro-life groups by ourselves can't do much good. The reason why we have power is because, you know, people support us. So it's not, you know, pointy-headed people in Washington. It's the grassroots. So we really need people to get engaged, call the White House, write to the White House, get letters sent in. You know, we just need to let people, the administration, know that this is a priority.
You know, that's a great point, Michael, to give our listeners tools on what they can do. Because oftentimes people feel hopeless and helpless. They're like, oh, you know, there's nothing I can do. But you can do something. So maybe you get a group of people together, and it would it be effective if there's a ton of people signing the same letter in maybe a community or a church group or a pro-life group in their community or hometown? I mean, can you walk them through the steps? This may be something so new to people listening that they didn't realize they could do anything at all.
Sure. Getting a group of people to sign a letter is always effective. You know, once elected officials see a group together, they know that, you know, there's people are communicating with each other and that concerns them. So, sure, I mean, you know, I think that the pro-life movement is going to start to make it a little bit easier for people to interface with the administration. You know, I do see online petitions being circulated. You know, I do see events happening in the near future to raise the status of this issue. You know, again, we're grateful that RFK Jr. is doing a review of these chemical abortion pills, but we need more faster. So I think, again, we'll be in touch with, you know, local pro-life groups. People can still do things on their own. They can collect petitions at church. They can, you know, email the White House. They can call the White House. You know, there are, you know, comment lines available. You know, people need to take advantage of those things.
You know, Michael, we have about a minute left with you, and I know you made note that, you know, pro-lifers shouldn't look, it's positive, but at the same time, there's a lot of work still to be done. How does the other side look at this decline, in your opinion?
That's a good question. I mean, I think they obviously are against the Florida Heartbeat Act. You know, they did try to put a ballot proposition that would put legal abortion in Florida's constitution. They failed, but they're trying to undermine pro-life laws elsewhere. You know, they realize the laws have some impact. There may be another ballot question in Florida in the future. That wouldn't surprise me. There's ballot questions elsewhere. So whenever we win, they do push back. So you know, we always have to be wary. Even though Florida is a conservative state, you know, they're going to put money in these ballot propositions, and we need to be concerned and prepared.
Any last words from you, Michael New, in the last few seconds we have with you here on Catholic Connection, Assistant Professor of Social Research at the Catholic University of America, talking about the abortion rates dropping. Any last words for our listener before we let you go?
Just want to encourage everyone to be a happy warrior for life. You know, we're in this for the long haul. You know, we're never promised a smooth glide path to victory. We're going to have setbacks and aggravations, but our cause is a good one. It's a true one. It's a just one. We just have to do our job and do it well.
Michael New, always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you for your insights.
Thank you.
God bless you and all that you do. Michael New, Assistant Professor of Social Research at the Catholic University of America. Coming up next after the break, Katrine Bennett, author of Holier Matrimony, Married Saints, Catholic Vows, and Sacramental Grace. She'll be joining us after this. Don't go away. Matrimony, Married Saints, Catholic Vows, and Sacramental Grace, the book available at the EWTN Religious Catalog. And to talk about that is our next guest, the author, Katrine Bennett. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Vanessa.
I'm pronouncing that right, correct? Katrine?
Yes, Katrine.
Okay,
yes.
Katrine. So, Katrine, tell us what inspired you to write this book.
Well, I really became friends with some saints back in college and as a young adult. And then I got married and I realized that all the saints that I was learning about, or almost all of them, were religious or single. And I needed some married saints to be, you know, my friends and my inspiration for my marriage and my vocation. So I started learning more about them, and that's how this book came to be.
So who's your particular target audience?
I would say I definitely wrote the book mostly for engaged couples, because I think it's so important that we're able to come into our marriage understanding already what kind of commitment we're making and what the vows mean that we're taking. That's a big part of this book, that we don't just say the vows, that one day we learn them and then we live them out every day. But anybody who is married could definitely benefit from the book. A lot of your listeners have probably been married a lot longer than I have, but luckily this book is not marriage according to Catron and Chris Bennett. This is marriage according to the Catholic Church. So it's a lot more than just 9 years of marriage advice. We've got 2,000 years here.
So, Catron, I love the fact that you recognized a gap, you know, something that was missing and for a particular group of people. And you've solved that problem. You filled that gap. You know, why would readers benefit from this book?
I think having friends in heaven who got there by the same vocational path that you did is really inspiring, and it's practically really helpful because you can learn how they lived out their life and their marriage, and then you can try to imitate that in your own marriage. And then also those saints are going to be praying for you, which is obviously really powerful and helpful to your marriage also. And then learning the vows, like I said, will help you to be a better spouse. This is your job description, are the vows of the marriage that we take as Catholics. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. If you want to be a better wife, just look back at your vows and say, okay, I'm going to find a way to love my husband more freely today. What does that look like? I'm going to find a way to love my wife more in sickness and in health today. And how can I do that? So you don't have to make that up yourself. You can look at what the church has given you in those vows.
Hmm. I love that. What great examples for us. And, you know, I have friends in the saint world as well. Many saints are my friends. I lean on them all the time. And marriage is a journey. You know, there's ups and downs. And we know this, whether you've been married a year or, you know, 10 years, 50 years, there's ups and downs, you know. And so we all need support. We all need each other. And why not lean on the saints and look at their lives and how they went through some of their own struggles? So what stories of some saint couples from the book can you share with us, or are you most excited to share with our listeners today? Maybe a couple stories?
Well, obviously, I'm pretty attached to all of them. That's why I chose the ones that I did.
Yeah.
But probably the chapter that I'm most excited about is a couple that died in the Rwandan genocide in 1994. Mm. So recently. Their names are the Servants of God, Cyprian and Daphrose Rugamba. Mm. And they were really inspiring to me, you know, as a more modern married couple, and they had a bunch of kids, really beautiful family, but also because they're such a good example of healing within a marriage, that they had a lot of trials and tribulation at the beginning of their marriage, and the man, Cyprian in particular, was pretty spiritually ill before the marriage and in the first few years of the marriage, and his wife just prayed for him constantly, prayed for their children, and he ended up converting and also kind of being miraculously healed from a physical illness at the same time. And then they were able to work together and effect so much greater change together in a time when their country really needed voices for peace and unity. And they brought that, and ultimately they gave their lives for that.
Hmm. Wow. What a beautiful story. And that is in many of our lifetimes. So that's like right here, something we could read about. And I remember covering the Rwanda genocide and talking about it, and these are stories that you might not have heard about, right?
I'm excited to share their story because people don't know them yet. It's also kind of the most personal story because I was able to interview one of their close personal friends for the chapter,
which
is not the case for people like St. Monica who lived so much longer ago.
Yes. But that's a great example that you can, what was that like for you to interview somebody, the family friends of a couple that you are featuring in this book? What was that experience like for you?
It's so interesting to talk to somebody who really knew those people, you know, in their daily lives. He had stayed at their house when he would visit Rwanda, and actually they called him that morning and said, you know, we hear gunfire outside. He was one of the last people that they talked to. Mm-hmm. And he, even more than me and more than, you know, people who are just reading about them, I'm sure was so inspired by their lives.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned something important about praying for your spouse. You know, I was probably like 4 or 5 years into my marriage until I learned that part of my responsibility, my biggest responsibility, is to get my spouse to heaven. I'm like, really? I didn't know that. And you know, and so let's talk about the Catholic marriage vows and how they're tied to the book and our responsibility as spouses to our spouse.
Yeah, it's a big responsibility to not only work on your own salvational path, but, you know, on your spouse's, that you're responsible for them and for your children, too. The vows are comprehensive. You know, the church gives them to us. We don't get to write our own vows, which was kind of a relief to me. And I kind of took each of those 8 vows, which are to love freely, faithfully, fully, fruitfully, in sickness and in health, for better or for worse, for richer or for poorer, until death do us part. That's 8. And I took each of those 8 and gave them either a saint or a couple that I thought really exemplified that vow. So in each chapter, you get to read their biography and then kind of trace that vow through their marriage and their life. And then I give some ideas about today, how you could live that vow out in your own life also.
That's beautiful. What a great example and something to learn from. What last words do you want to share with our listeners about reading this book? You know what? I see this, Katrin, as being a great book for marriage prep. I'm going to tell you that right now. I think this is something
that... I would love to see that.
Yeah, that would be great. If people are listening and you're running marriage prep, I know a couple of people that run marriage prep here in Michigan and the St. Thomas Chaldean Eparchy and the Chaldean community, and I'm definitely going to recommend this because I think this would be a great book to read in marriage prep as a couple and then talk about it in the group that you're meeting together. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, I agree. And I have discussion questions at the end of each chapter and a prayer that would be really good to use in a group setting. So I definitely designed it for that purpose. And I would love to see programs like Engaged Encounter or Marriage Encounter pick this up as a resource to share with their users.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. So I know it's available at the EWTN Religious Catalog. Who published the book?
Marian Press.
Marian Press. Wonderful. Any last words, Katrin, you want to share with our listeners here on Catholic Connection before we let you go?
Just get married in the Catholic Church, learn your vows, and keep living them out every day, and let your marriage be an example of Christ's love for the church.
Thank you so much, Katrin, for being with us and sharing your book, Holier Matrimony, Married Saints, Catholic Vows, and Sacramental Grace, available at the EWTN Religious Catalog, a great place to find great Christmas gifts. Thank you for being with us. God bless you in all that you do.
Thank you so much.
Stay with us, everyone. Joan Lewis is going to be with us after the break. Catholic Connection, Vanessa Denha-Garmo filling in for Teresa Tamio on this Wednesday, and that means Joan Lewis is with us. Joan's Rome. How are you, Joan? How's everything going in Italy?
Well, I'm doing great. Just got back a couple days ago from a fantastic vacation, and you know, I'm going to try and keep up with Pope Leo, all of his activities. So
yeah, let's talk about that because a lot going on. And so
all
tell
the various
us.
Jubilees that there have been, you know,
yes.
This Jubilee Year of Mercy and, I mean, Jubilee Year of Hope. And so there's every single weekend there's some group, that, you know, religious consecrated life coming up, et cetera. That's today, as a matter of fact. So he's always has some kind of appearance with people, either a Jubilee celebration in St. Peter's Square or a mass and everything else. And, of course, today was the general audience. It was really fascinating. I mean, Vanessa, there were 60,000 people at today's Wednesday audience.
Wow.
That's the figure given out by the Vatican, which is always how the gendarmes calculate it. They, you know, I don't know how they do it, but even Rome police, when there's a big crowd, they calculate so many people per square meter, and, you know, St. Peter's Square has so many meters, however they do it. Anyway, and there's a part of the story of today, and I'm still trying to get news on, but there was a beautiful selection, some bells from a place called Novellara were in St. Peter's Square, and they were resounding, after, in particular after the audience, I think a little bit before as well. But there were, there's supposed to be something about, the, they were called in an article in the Osservatore Romano, the Bells of the Jubilee of Mercy. Very, very beautiful. But I think they're part of what I saw in the headline, a mobile bell concert. I saw four bells that the Pope himself was in front of them and being given an explanation today. So lots of fun things. And then after the general audience, there's always a huge number of bishops and some cardinals to come to greet the Holy Father. And so the bells were rung at that point of the at the end of the general audience, and then there must have been some kind of small group. I did hear a violin playing, so a very musical Wednesday, but it was an amazing catechesis, to be honest with you. It's one of those things you want to read twice because it's so beautiful. And the Pope talked about what he called the surprises of the resurrection. He said a surprising aspect was Christ's humility. He said, we realize, looking back at the gospel, that the risen Lord does nothing spectacular to impose himself on the faith of his disciples. He's not surrounded by hosts of angels. He doesn't perform spectacular feats. He doesn't deliver solemn speeches to reveal the secrets of the universe, said the Pope. He approaches discreetly like any other wayfarer. In fact, I love it. Pope Leo said, Mary Magdalene mistook him for a gardener after the resurrection. I know. The disciples of Emmaus thought he was a stranger. Peter and the other fishermen think he's just a passersby. But the Lord, he doesn't seek special effects or signs of power, overwhelming evidence of his resurrection. He just wants normality. He just wants to share a meal. I thought this was so great. And I think he made a the Pope made a good point when he said, the disappointment of the disciples after the passion of the Lord blinded them to the joy of the resurrection. And Jesus, rather than dazzling them with his glorious splendor, chose to appear with great humility, teaching them that his death was the mysterious path by which he redeemed us and manifested his love for us. However disappointed, unworthy, or lost we may feel, no matter how deep our pain, the Lord wants to accompany us on our path and teach us to discover the salvific meaning of our own suffering. I mean, you know, those are just a few sentences of a very, very beautiful catechesis. And I think I'm going to kind of put this in a special folder and go back and read the whole thing next Easter, right after the resurrection. But it's very, very beautiful, heartfelt words. So,
do you see yourself writing about it, maybe a way for us to even reflect on that, and maybe one of your blogs?
Absolutely. You know, because I think, Vanessa, when you look at something, whether it's Christmas and the birth of our Lord and Savior, or whether it's Easter and the, you know, passion and death and resurrection of our Lord and Savior, we just take these not exactly as a normal Sunday or feast day, but we just take it for granted. You know, Easter, we know the date every year, we celebrate it. We know it's going to be Holy Week. We know the 3 days of the Triduum. But I think we can honestly say we do take certain things for granted. We've got to look at it in a different way. And that's what I think the Pope did in this. Yeah. It never dawned on me until I read the Pope's words, which was not dawning on me, they were his words. But it never dawned on me to think of Christ after the resurrection being humble.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, I mean, he rose from the dead. Nobody had ever done it on their own before or at, you know, after. And we should be dazzled by the fact that of this glorious splendor of the resurrection. But no, Jesus was back down to earth, so to speak, with humility and talking about eating with the disciples of Emmaus, eating with his own apostles, and life goes on. But folks, please remember, and this is Jesus saying, you know, please remember, I underwent the passion, I died, and I rose from the dead for you, and for salvation. So, yeah, this is, it's almost a prayer.
Love that. That's something so beautiful to meditate on, and is in his humility, because it's not like he responded like, "Come on, Mary, man, you didn't know this is me."
Exactly. But you know what? The one thought I always have after, like during the rosary when I meditate, you know, on the resurrection is, what would be, because Mary Magdalene was so, you know, tearful and trials, and oh my gosh, they stole our, you know, where did they put our Lord? He's no longer here. And I've been trying to imagine her reaction when, of course, she did see the risen Lord. What would I feel if I'm sitting in my living room and a relative who had long ago or a short time ago died knocked at my door and walked in? I mean, I'd probably pass out of emotion, but just think of seeing someone you thought was dead and gone and you'd never see him again, and they come back. And so, well, it was also proof for all the, for the apostles and all the disciples.
Yeah.
When our Lord said the temple would be destroyed and rebuilt, you know, he meant the temple, obviously, of his body. So, yeah wonderful things to think on.
I'm going to switch gears a little bit and talk about the Pope's foreign trip, but I just want to add, when I think about that, Joan, I can't help but think of how many people have the attitude is, don't you know who I am? You know, they get, I've had elected leaders, you know, we've covered here in Detroit where they get pulled over. Don't you know who I am? How dare you pull me over? Like that arrogance of people. What a lesson from Jesus about humility. Let's switch gears a little bit here. Yeah. I mean, what a lesson for all of us. The Pope's first foreign trip. What can you share with us about that?
Oh, how exciting. Well, he's going to be in Turkey and Lebanon. First Turkey, 27 to 30 November, and then Lebanon until December 2nd and back to Rome. And I've just been so excited. I've been to both of these countries twice. Love them, love their people, love their history. The situation today, certainly in Lebanon, is so disastrous economically and in many, many ways. And so I think the people, to have the visit of a pope, I mean, Benedict was there. Oh, gosh, when was it, 2011 or 12, when he entrusted an apostolic exhortation to the people after the synod on the Middle East. So that's the last time, you know, a pope has been there. And I don't remember, now that I think of it, I don't remember if Francis did go there. But the Vatican announced the trip, and the pope actually told journalists, you know, lately he's been spending Monday night and Tuesdays in Castel Gandolfo to the great joy of the townspeople. Mm-hmm. And so he'll go there like Monday afternoon, spend the night, work there, etc. You know, try not to have any audiences or meetings, and then come back to Rome on Tuesday. But journalists are now know he's going to do this, and on Tuesdays come back and leave Villa Barberini in Castel Gandolfo. So they're always there, a good number of them, to talk to the Pope when he comes out. And he explained to the journalist on Tuesday that the trip to Turkey is motivated by the anniversary of the 1700 years since the Council of Nicaea. I believe it's a truly important moment. It's a journey Pope Francis wanted to make, he said, of his predecessor. For all Christians, it will be a moment of genuine unity and faith. We must not miss this historic opportunity. But it's not about looking back, it's about looking forward. And then on the second part of his trip to Lebanon, Pope Leo said, it's primarily intended to bring comfort to a people who have, since the Beirut port explosion on August 4th, 2020, suffered one blow after the other. In Lebanon, I'll have the opportunity to once again proclaim the message of peace in the Middle East, in a country that has suffered so much. And talking about Pope Francis, he said he wanted to embrace the people of Lebanon after the explosion, after everything they've endured, we will try to bring this message of peace and hope. So I think there'll be extraordinary days in two extraordinary countries. And I have to tell you, just minutes before the phone, you know, rang and here we're bringing us together, I was starting an email to a friend of mine whom I got to know in college. We both were studying in Switzerland at the same time. Vince Battle went into America's Diplomatic Corps service and was in various places of the world. He became an ambassador. His last posting was in Lebanon, and he loved it and the people and everything so much that he actually bought a place there. And so we saw each other on a couple of my trips to Lebanon. So I was just writing him to, you know, see how things are and see how excited he must be as a Catholic for the Pope to come to the country that he loves. So a lot to look forward to, and I think we're going to be riveted to the scene when the Pope, you know, starts his travels. Very significant for Pope Leo to have chosen these spots, I think, as his first trip.
Yeah.
You know, well, Pope Francis wanted to go to Turkey for the 1700th anniversary, and obviously I think he sensed, even when he would talk about it, you know, toward the end of his life, he kind of knew he would not make it. So his successor is going, and that's wonderful.
Yeah,
a good tribute.
Yeah. Joan Lewis, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to have you on here on Catholic Connection. Give us an update on what's going on in the Vatican. Joan's Rome, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
Stay with us, everyone. We're going to wrap up here and talk about who's coming up on EWTN Radio Extra. I'm not saying this to try to sound like I'm patting myself on the back, but those were some great conversations. I really enjoyed them. Thank you to all of our guests for joining us here this hour. Michael New, Assistant Professor of Social Research at Catholic University of America, talking about the abortion rates dropping. And we still have a lot of work to do, as Michael New explained. And so we can do our part. And he gave some great tools and things that we can do as the lay community and helping in the pro-life movement. So it's a great interview to re-listen to, maybe sharing with your friends and family and talking about how you can be part of this effort in the pro-life movement. Katrin Bennett, author of Holier Matrimony, Married Saints, Catholic Vows, and Sacramental Grace. And as I promised, I shared her book with ECRC, who does marriage prep here in Michigan and churches listening across the country. This is a great marriage prep book. You know, I think this is awesome to share stories of married saints on our on our journey, our life as married couples. So thank you, Katrin Bennett, that inspired her to write that from her own experience. She had relationships and friendships with saints, but she got married. She realized she didn't find a lot of saints who were married. And so she did her research and her due diligence, and she wrote stories about them. So thank you for putting that into a book. Joan Lewis, thank you so much for being with us, sharing us updates on Vatican News, Joan's Rome, her blog. You can all read it. Coming up, I'll have my coach's commentary on the importance of connecting, communicating, and collaborating with people right in your own backyard. And then Bobby Angel is in studio. How can we recover wisdom and truth to spark a holy reform of our thinking and ideas? Great conversation. Stay with us, everyone. We're heading into EWTN Radio Extra.